Welcome to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. This is a podcast that will make you want to get outdoors and will give you some great ideas as a sport parent, athlete, or coach. Born in the beautiful mountain town of Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the Winter Sports Club was founded over a century ago and now serves a majority of kids in our community and has produced more Winter Olympians than any other club in North America. There are secrets and great stories to share as we play year-round in these mountains we call home. Our calling is to develop complete athletes on and off the mountain by cultivating a passion for the outdoors and a love of sports at all levels. Stay tuned to hear from Olympians, athletes of all ages, coaches, experts, and people who are doing amazing things to make an impact in our community and in their sport.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Nicole DeBoom. I'm a former professional triathlete who finally discovered the joys of skiing in my late 40s when I moved to Steamboat Springs with my family. We immediately discovered the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club, and it's become a huge part of our lives as my husband, Tim DeBoom, is a ski and bike coach, and my daughter, Wilder, has found happiness, friendship, and joy through skiing, jumping, riding, and more. I am thrilled to bring the positive energy of the Winter Sports Club to people all over the world. Thanks for listening. Now let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back. It's a good day because I'm sitting here with not just today's amazing guest, the club's U16 Alpine coach, Ben Brown, who you will hear about in a minute, I promise, but I have a guest host today, our own chief operating officer, John Nolting. And yes, you may have just heard his voice in the intro. You're going to freak out in a second. John, thanks so much for tag teaming the interview with me today.
Yeah, I'm super excited, Nicole. I'm excited to talk with Ben, who I've known for over 25 years, first as an athlete and now as an amazing coach, and he's coached my kids now. So it's cool how things come full circle.
They really do. And here's what's really funny. I wish this was on video because John and I are sharing a mic. We're very close right now. Ben, you get the luxury of having a solo mic. You're so spoiled over there. All right, let me talk a little bit about you and then we're going to let you talk. You, Ben, have been coaching with the club since 2013. That's 10. It's a decade after a full career of ski racing as a Midwestern kid, then through college at Western State University, and after college at an elite level on the Continental Cup. You landed in Steamboat over a decade ago, and you've been helping young athletes reach their goals on the snow ever since. We're so happy to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And this is my first podcast. Hopefully it's not my last one.
It depends on how you do today, Ben. No pressure. Although I think you might be used to pressure. This is going to be fun. So, you know, I thought we could start out by hearing about your background and how the heck you came to be a coach in the first place.
Well, thanks, Nicole and John, again, for having me. And, my coaching career started after college. Just doing summer camps up at Mount Hood, and then coached at Loveland for a little while still racing after college. And then I coached for a private team for 1 year called Iced Out Racing. And then I coached back east at the academy, Green Mountain Valley School. While I was coaching at Loveland and racing, I came up to the Holiday Classic, and I won that ski race. And I sort of fell in love with Steamboat, and about 6 years later, I was able to move here as the U16 head coach, and I've been here ever since.
Okay, so that's kind of a little nuts and bolts of like your very abbreviated coaching journey, but what did you do before that? Let's talk about your actual background as a kid skier.
Yeah, I had kind of an untraditional pathway that, you know, maybe wouldn't be as achievable now, but I came from a little ski area in Michigan with no snowmaking. I had very passionate coaches along the way, and my parents and my grandparents, you know, we skied together as a family, came out to Colorado and did the Junior Olympics and met Billy Kidd, and just fell in love with Colorado, and have wanted to move out here my whole life. I wanted to make the U.S. ski team, and I worked really hard at it. Didn't necessarily have the opportunities that kids in Steamboat have, but there is a strong racing culture and skiing culture in Michigan and Upper Michigan, where I'm from, and I credit that a lot for my passion.
So you mentioned, like, when you were really young, you found skiing. Did you just find it, or did your parents introduce you to it? How did you find skiing in the, like, I'm imagining rural Upper Peninsula, but probably you lived in a cool little town with, you know, other recreation and industry.
Yeah, it was a little town, Houghton, Michigan. My parents, you know, built a log cabin. They lived in a teepee for a year while they were building it, and just walked around on cross-country skis in the woods, and you know, just went skiing every day after school. The ski area didn't open until school got out, so the powder would stay fresh and we could go out and go ski all the powder until they shut off the lights at night. And it was great because you get the lake effect snow there in Michigan, so you get actually quite a bit of light, dry powder like we do here in Steamboat.
And, you know, John, anytime you want to, like, pop in, you can also ask questions, because I'm dominating right now because I'm so intrigued by this. So you basically entered the world of skiing through the best, most joyful kind of skiing you can get.
Yeah, I think it was very organic. And I think Steamboat kind of has that same kind of lifestyle. And I'm excited to raise my kid and hopefully kids here soon. Yeah, it's a great lifestyle.
Okay, so you also mentioned as a kid that you started to have these goals. So were you the kind of kid who just figured out how to set your own goals and, like, pinned them up on the bathroom mirror at night and looked at them every day? Or did you have coaches or people who guided you along the way?
I was never pushed along the way by my parents or by my coaches. I just wanted to make the U.S. ski team. I wanted to ski for CU, University of Colorado, but I didn't quite achieve that goal. So I skied for another NCAA school in Colorado. I never even went to look at the school. I just graduated high school, and I knew I wanted to be in Colorado, and I wanted to ski for an NCAA program, and that checked the boxes. So my dad dropped me off, and I kind of worked my way up in college too. Coming out of Michigan, I didn't really have the pedigree, and I just continued to improve throughout college, and then that's why I continued to ski after college.
Okay, I'm going to have John pop in because he said to me, this will be cool, and I want to do this interview with you because I knew Ben back when. So maybe you can share a little bit about your observations of Ben as a 15-year-old skier.
Yeah, I worked out in the Midwest for U.S. Ski and Snowboard for 3 years while Ben was just emerging as a fifth level ski racer. So about 15, 16, 17 years old were his ages while I was out there. And he was definitely one of the top guys coming out of an area up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where, you know, as you said, Ben, there was a skiing culture there and a racing culture, but really the success up to the collegiate level and to perform at an NCAA level, that was not common for a skier there. You definitely showed a lot of initiative. And I think that helped propel you. Certainly once you got to Colorado and had that opportunity there at school, how did that help take your skiing to the next level?
Yeah, thanks, John, for sharing that. And yeah, I was lucky to have really good, passionate coaches along the way that, you know, I think I had the right coaches at the right time in my career. They were just had a deep love for skiing and coaching when I was younger. And then when I got to college, I kind of got that real tough guy coach, and probably my favorite coach, Scott Myers or Scooter. And he, you know, really taught me how to ski well and taught me how to ski GS. And I just thrived in that environment where, you know, you're basically, a semi-professional athlete because you're in school and you're, you know, pursuing your sport. And you're just around this really supportive, great environment. I think NCAA skiing is a great pathway for our alumni of the Winter Sports Club. And it was for me. And, you know, I think it's becoming, you know, a pathway to the U.S. ski team, which I think it needs to be.
And can you talk a little bit about the team aspect of your experience racing at Western State?
Yeah, it was just a great group of guys. Like we would go out and girls, and we would go out and like mountain bike on the weekends together. We loved being around each other. We we lived together and pushed each other, and we taught each other about skiing. We had great coaches, but a lot of the things I learned were those chairlift rides, those T-bar rides at Crested Butte, where, you know, we were just pushing each other every day. And although we weren't one of the best teams on paper, we ended up, you know, beating a lot of the bigger NCAA programs, and had a great era of success because of that team culture.
That is one of the underappreciated things of skiing and snowboarding. The chairlift ride is so unique in sport, where you have this time on the lift, a built-in break between doing your activity in there, where you're usually social with friends. You can catch a ride with a coach and break things down with that. Or you can reflect on your own, and that built-in break that exists between every repetition is a completely unique thing, I think, to skiing and snowboarding.
Yeah, and it could be just going out and free skiing and, you know, skiing powder. And you know, we just love to ski. And I think that, you know, united us and just made us better.
You just put a spin on something that I hadn't really thought about before, but I usually thought about the chairlift ride as like the lazy part of skiing. Cause you know, I come from an endurance background. So I'm like, you get like 30 seconds to go down the hill and do your thing. And if you screw it up, then you have to wait like, you know, 20 minutes sometimes to get back up to the top. But it sounds like those, everything about skiing, you can turn into something to help your performance or just round you out as a person.
Yeah, and you can be watching your teammates as you're going up the lift, and you can be learning as you're going up the lift, and but yeah, there's a lot of I think, you know, there's not a lot of time that you're actually skiing, and so the more, you know, thought you can be putting into those 6 or 7 minutes that you're actually skiing down the mountain, I think, you know, how you take advantage of that short amount of time is what separates the best from those that don't get as far in the sport.
You know, okay, all these things, I'm taking notes on all these things because, like, in my head, these are all things that you have put into place to make your coaching so magical. But I actually want to continue on your trajectory for a second. So, you know, you're in college and you have this amazing coach and your eyes are opened up and you're doing things other than skiing. I mean, you mentioned mountain biking in summer. So there's just like a, sounds like an acceptance of doing the things that will make you a better athlete in all ways. And then college is over. And for most elite athletes of any sport, once college is over, you're done with your sport, unless you want to go join a local club and do soccer or whatever it was. But in your world, you made the decision to keep going and keep pushing. So can you talk a little bit about that path from college to professional skiing?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted a PG after high school, but my parents said, no way, you have to go to college. We're not paying for this. So I kind of had the deal with them that if I graduated in 4 years, I was going to keep skiing after college. And I felt like I was personally more prepared at that time to make that jump. And the thing about skiing, it's a skill sport, so you don't really ever stop getting better. And so, you know, I was just getting better and better and better, and I had some injuries along the way. And so I just kind of wanted to achieve my potential and look back at my career and go, I gave it everything I had and have no regrets. And even though I came up just short of my goal of making the U.S. ski team, I have no regrets with the pathway and the decisions I made. The financial part of it was challenging, but there's so many, you know, great people in this sport that will help you if you've been in it long enough. And, you know, I was able to kind of coach and balance the two of racing. And then eventually when I started coaching, I realized you can't really be an athlete too, because, you know, you really owe those athletes, you know, everything you can give them. So I started to, you know, my performance started to go downhill a little bit because I was, you know, we were traveling all over the world. And my first coaching assignment was to go to Stelvio, Italy, and with 5 athletes because the head coach couldn't go. He had to run his business, and he just sent me to Italy. And so I had to, you know, take care of these 5 athletes, and 3 of those guys made it to the national team. So that was fun, but challenging.
You know, I can relate to this actually too, because back in the day when I was chasing the path to become a professional triathlete, you couldn't do just that because there wasn't enough money in it. In most what I would call fringe sports, which, you know, alpine racing, you probably have a better shot of making real money. But that's kind of part of the equation, right? So you're like, okay, I have to dabble in some things that help pay the bills while I'm chasing the dream. And then the teeter-totter's going to tip one way or the other. You're either going to make it and like get all the sponsorships and, you know, win the prize purses, or you're going to realize that this path you were on is going to serve you in different ways. So at what point, you said, you told the story about how, was that trip the point where you were like, okay, I'm done racing, it's time?
I think I kind of knew that season. I wanted to give it one more shot. And I think by the end of that season, I was like, this is too much. I can't do this anymore. You know, and I think, you know, it really doesn't come down. It comes down to the fitness piece. I think if you can be in an environment where you can really maintain that fitness, because you don't lose the skill. And for me, that I think was the limiting factor. I just wasn't in the right environment with the dry land programming in the summer to, you know, I was doing construction, you know, and I was not really giving it everything I could. And yeah, the writing just, I was 25, I think. And yeah, the writing was on the wall.
It's time to grow up. Well, we're so glad you did. So, since then, when you made that decision, have you basically been a coach since then until now for the last 15 years?
Yes, I've been a full-time coach since then. Yeah, so I've gotten so much from ski racing. I'm very grateful, and you know, that's why I want to give back.
Well, so last night there was a staff orientation for coaches, and my husband Tim came home and I said, did you talk to Ben? I'm interviewing him tomorrow. He's like, no, but I saw him and I heard him speak. And I said, what did he say? And he's like, you'll have to ask him tomorrow. But from what I know, they asked you to stand up and share your why about coaching. And so I'm asking you right now to share with us what you said last night. Why? What's your why?
I think at the root of it, I like helping people. I think the relationships, building relationships is the best part about coaching. And, you know, I think we have a mutual respect where the athletes, you know, they do their job, we do our job. And I think we feed off of each other. We feed off that energy of hard work towards common goals, both individual goals and team goals, of being the best that we can be. And, you know, I love skiing. I'm passionate about it. I want to grow their passion for it and just show them all the cool places they can go and see and people that they can meet. And through that, just being grateful for the opportunities that we have through ski racing and through the Winter Sports Club.
You know, it's super interesting. I'm sitting here thinking about your athletic career and you're starting to coaching. And I absolutely love the transition from athlete to coach that you made and that overlap in there. I had some of that too, not quite at the level that you had. But hearing you talk about it, it makes me realize the athletic mindset with which you bring to your coaching, because you were so in it at the time you transitioned to coaching. But what you said in your why and what you said right away that helped you kick yourself from athlete to coach was understanding right away that it was about the athletes. You needed to commit to the athletes if you were going to be a good coach. And I think that's one of the things that stands out for you today. It sounds like you got that early on, because that can be a hard transition for somebody to go from that athlete mindset to a coaching mindset. Talk a little bit about how they're different.
Well, yeah, I'm remembering, first off, you racing at some Mid-Am races against me while you were the regional director. And I thought that was so cool. You'd be in the finish cheering us on. And yeah, we go way back to U.S. Nationals. And so thanks, John, for being one of my coaches along the way. But yeah, I think, you know, I think having coached, you know, such a broad range of athletes, and you know, you're coaching these athletes that want to make the Olympics, and then athletes that just want to be the best that they can be. But it doesn't matter how they did previously. I think what, as a coach, you want to look at their potential and just help them get to whatever their personal goal is. And if they don't get on a podium, but maybe they just, you know, they make junior championships, you know, and they get to be with their team at that event, you know, that could be their Olympics, you know? So, I think just developing that trust with athletes, you know, you talk about like putting deposits in and, you know, building athletes up, because, you know, at some point you're going to need to take take away something and break them down with those withdrawals. And, you know, so just trying to have that relationship of trust where they know that you're always thinking of them and their interest, and that you're prepared. They know they can trust you. And I think that detailed training plan and just having a clear task for what you're trying to accomplish that day can help build that trust with the athletes.
Okay, so I love this. So basically, you're the U16 coach. How many kids are in your program?
15 this year.
15. And yet you are taking an individualized approach for each kid. That's what I'm hearing. I heard you basically say, like, every kid has their Olympics. And I love that idea, because a lot of programs and a lot of coaches tend to gravitate towards the highest performer. And they leave the rest of the kids out, and the rest of the kids kind of peel off, and then they stop racing because they didn't get the attention or the self-confidence or all the other great things they can get from it. But it sounds like you're somehow able to approach a big team, a big group, with an individualized strategy. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of coaching the way that you would have liked to be coached. You know, give them this, like, I loved video, you know, I loved, you know, that we watched it on VHS, but just, you know, give everybody that opportunity to be the best that they can be. And it's not that hard. You know, you just show them that you care and pay attention and just really be present to, you know, what they're maybe feeling. And it's not about necessarily telling them something. It's maybe asking them a question like, did you feel balanced? And, you know, maybe trying to get them to think of something that they wouldn't have otherwise thought of. But as far as the team aspect goes, I think, you know, everybody can have a role on the team. Like, you can have, even in an individual sport, you know, you can have that kid that maybe isn't the best, but, you know, they can help fire up the team. You know, everybody loves having them around. And so everybody's got a role on the team. You know, everybody can be a leader in a sense. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you have those kids that are, you know, the best, and they're really fun to coach, but it's really fun to see someone that's not as, you know, skilled skier work really hard in the dry land, you know, and get really strong. And then that translates to success on the hill. You know, I think U16s is really where hard work and talent separate, because you can get to a U16 level on talent alone. That's maybe a little controversial, but once you get to U16, it's really the hard work that's going to separate the kids that really take off.
I totally hear you on that. And I've always thought of it as like a three-pronged thing for success, which is talent, which oftentimes you're kind of born with. Some people never even know they have. And then you've got that hard work, discipline, that drive. But then you've also got the attitude, the mindset for it as well. And talent's fun, right? Hard work, you can drive kids hard, but it's engaging their minds and putting their minds into the mix as well. How do you work with all those three prongs and help kids develop all three to become the athletes they are at this crucial age?
It's a good question, Nicole. I think that actually is probably what sets kids apart, you know, as they go into FIS, is that ability to race and really put themselves on the line, because what they're doing is quite dangerous. And so the ones that really learn how to race and, you know, are okay with accepting that risk are the ones that tend to do better when they get to FIS. Yes, you need the what did you say, the talent and the hard work, but I think that mental side is probably the most important thing for the athletes that really succeed long term. And how we develop that is, I think, just that trust, right? You know, there's a certain element of risk every day out there, and just, you know, the athletes know that they can trust the coach, and we're never going to put them in an environment that's, you know, excessively unsafe. You know, there's always an element of danger, but, you know, we're going to help, you know, minimize as many variables as we can with equipment, with our dry land preparation, with our inspection, with our communication, so that we can manage that risk safely. And, it goes back to that trust with the coach.
I'm going to ask John to share. So, John, you had brought up something, because at this time, I love this whole flow. In fact, I wish you could coach me in something right now. I don't know what it would be, but you just have such a great energy. And these kids are so lucky. So at this age, you start to see a lot of kids burn out, right? And John, you brought up something about retention rates with Ben's group. Maybe you can ask him what you were thinking on that.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, these are 14 and 15-year-olds that Ben's worked with at the program. They're just starting into high school. We know how difficult a time that is for a kid just in their development as a human being, let alone an athlete in the sport. And as you say, and I agree, Ben, it's where talent starts to separate. You can't just ride that talent alone. What you create in groups, what I've observed, is just a culture around the team. We're working hard and believing that it's that there's intrinsic motivation to do that within the kids, that the whole group, not because the coaches are yeah, you're setting a difficult and challenging program for the kids, but you're not beating the kids over the head to get them to work hard. You're somehow in your approach, you're making it come from within them. And then the team kind of owns that culturally. And so in the club, I've observed that when a kid joins the U16 program at Steamboat, they tend to stay to the next level. The retention rates since you've been here, since I've been at the club, Ben, have been phenomenal, making that transition from the under 16 to the next age group up, where there's usually a lot of dropout. And to me, I think it's because you have established already at 14 and 15, these kids are prepared for that next level. And so they get excited about it. But I don't see it as being, but I see it as done in a way that they just naturally change. It's more intrinsic than really coach driving them hard.
Thanks, John. I hadn't really thought of it that way. That's nice. I mean, I feel like sometimes they're sick of listening to me, but we're really intentional about what we put in the ground with our drill, and you know what is the environment, and you know it's not necessarily am I teaching, it's are they learning, and it's like I said earlier, it's asking them questions. You know, how did that feel, and just letting them learn through the environment. Giving them some ownership over the program, I would say, is another thing. You talk about autonomy, and you know, we're very intentional about asking them, you know, what do you guys think you need? You know, debriefing at the end of the day, you know, how was that? What did you learn? That's something I learned from your wife, John, Darlene Nolte. She does a great job on the regional trips about, you know, getting the athletes involved, making it feel like a team, and you know, just talking about what they learn, because they can learn from each other. But that is, I think, the team, you know, where they're all leaders on the team, and everybody's got a role to fill. I think that really helps to get that buy-in.
Well, you know what role we need to fill right now? Hunger. We're going to take a moment here and share some words about our amazing sponsor, Honey Stinger. Today, we are all taking a bite of, oh my gosh, Honey Stinger waffles.
Mmm.
Mmm. All right.
Love them.
Let's talk about them. What do you have here, John? What are you eating?
I'm doing the cookies and cream waffles, and I've got a secret for you. And we did this for an event we hosted last year. We did s'mores with cookies and cream waffles, and then the chocolate and marshmallow in there. We did it for our Moguls Junior National Championship event. It was a huge hit.
Okay, so I'm eating mine right now. You can tell. And I have I'm eating salted caramel. They make a whole range of different flavors, obviously. And what's cool is that the cookies and cream and salted caramel are both gluten-free. So if you have that issue, you are good to go here. Ben, what are you chomping on?
I'm chomping on a honey stinger waffle. And I was telling you guys earlier that one of my favorite things to do in the morning is put my waffle on top of my coffee cup, and it makes it nice and gooey. And the honey is a little bit more liquidy, and it's a great way to start your day before you go out on the hill.
Well, what I love about Honey Stinger in general is that they give us a little 1, 2, 3 on how to use their products. And what they say about the Honey Stinger waffles is that they fulfill both the prepare and perform covenants of their prepare, perform, recover program. So, you know, fear not. And in fact, I would say you can also use them when you're recovering. You can eat these things all day, every day. All right. Just eat them. Just buy them. Use the code SSWSC podcast for 20% off online. Get them now. All right. We ready? Back to the show.
Energized. Thanks.
Okay, guys, we were talking about culture and teamwork, and I think we've really gotten the vibe, Ben, that you do not make your athletes operate in a silo. They work together. They come together as a culture. How do you manage these personalities in this like adolescent time of life when there's probably a lot of drama? I mean, some of them might be dating each other. I mean, who knows what's going to go on in the 14, 15, 16-year-old world? How do you handle that, knowing that, A, you are a father, but your kid is many years away from this stage? So you don't have personal experience as a parent in this arena.
I think the best thing you can do is have other coaches that balance you out. You know, I think I'm more the, you know, I set the plan and, you know, I'm great with them on the hill, and I want to build those strong relationships, but we also have a great female coach in Ann West. And I think just having, you know, different people that they can come to for different things, it would be my advice there. We have a great support team, not only on the hill, but then in the gym. And yeah, I don't think I have the magic bullet for that answer. I think it's just one of those things where we want to be professional. That's kind of one of our core values as a team is, you know, let's focus on what's important now. And if we can keep some of that stuff, you know, till after training, then let's deal with it then.
All right. One thing we haven't really talked about is that all the things you're doing are working, and they've been working for a while because you won some big awards. I'm not going to get this right. John, you're going to call out the awards he's received.
So in 2020, Ben was recognized by U.S. Ski and Snowboard as the Alpine Domestic Coach of the Year, chosen amongst all of the coaches across the country for his great work with his athletes. And really impressively, just a few years later, this past May, he was again awarded that Domestic Coach of the Year for Alpine, as well as named the Development Coach of the Year, covering all of the disciplines under the U.S. Ski and Snowboard umbrella for his really terrific work. It was a fantastic season last year for his athletes, but you know, really sitting here listening today about the things, Ben, that you're talking about that you've included in your coaching and with your background, the results I know are one thing, but it's clear that your approach really is what earned you these awards.
Thanks, John. Yeah, it was a bit of a pinch me kind of season last year where, you know, we were just having success at all levels. You know, we had success at the U16 level, both nationally and internationally. And then some of the alumni of the program were getting podiums and NORAMs and World Cup points. And it was unbelievable. I think it was a testament to the dedication from the families and the athletes, especially during the COVID pandemic. I mean, we were down at Copper. Athletes were camping out at the Frisco Peninsula Recreation Area, and they were bringing their kids to Copper Mountain and up to Mount Hood. And we were really innovative and adapted. And I'm proud of you know, what the families and the athletes have done to get the results that came, you know, 2-3 years down the road. But it really is a journey. I mean, it's all the coaches from, you know, U6 to U8 to U10. These kids had great fundamentals, and we didn't screw them up. So,
no, you didn't screw them up. And I think you did a lot of work to really help them along. You know, last year in particular, we'll call out some athletes, and you had a tremendous, you know, as you said, last year was phenomenal. But in the OPA Cup races, which are considered the top international level event for under 16 age athletes, you had three athletes win gold medals at that event. and the U.S.'s domination, but particularly Steamboat's domination at that event, was unprecedented, with Abby Olson, Logan Gross Didier, and Adrian Beauregard all at the top of the podium. You've worked over the last, you've had the best athletes in the country, if not the world, for the last several years. Can you talk a little bit about what truly at 14 and 15, you know, what are the characteristics that separate those top athletes?
Yeah, that was amazing what those athletes did over there, and a credit to Brian Olsen and Darlene Nolting, who led that trip in Germany. And I was watching the results live, getting up at 3 a.m, and it was just unbelievable. What sets those athletes and the best athletes that I've coached apart is, I spoke about it a little bit earlier with Nicole, is that psychological ability to just race and you know, just they want to win, they want to go fast, and they push the line, and they're accepting of that risk, and that's important in our sport. You know, it's, these are fun sports, but they're also a little bit scary at times, and I think those athletes, they're comfortable with that risk.
Is there anything, you know, one thing, while the success at this level is amazing, the reality is the correlation between being the best in the country, if not the world, at that age still doesn't correlate real well to ultimately Olympic level or World Cup level. By that age, it's getting closer. I did some research back when I worked for US Ski and Snowboard and looked at results at similar competitions to OPA Cup for Americans. And I found that at that age, about 25% of those kids went on to national team level. And just under half had super successful ski racing careers, similar to your career, Ben, where they were at top levels, but not quite on that national team level. About a third, still a few years after their U16 years, were nowhere to be seen, left in the sport. You touched on just a bit ago the pride in athletes that you had several years ago that are now competing well on the NORAM circuit. What are the characteristics that are important, you think, to make that sustainable, that keeps that progression moving forward?
Yeah, there's so much, right? I mean, with skiing, there's, you know, it all starts with a good balanced athletic stance. Can they stand on their outside ski? I'd say the most important thing is, like, where is the weight on the ski? You know, are they bending the tip of the outside ski into the fall line? Are they moving through the transition? Are they able to adapt edge angle and turn shape? And, you know, are they going out there and, you know, just playing with their skiing and having that creative adaptability, that they have a broad range of skill sets that can adapt to different kinds of snow. You know, we have hard, grippy snow in Colorado, but when they go to Europe, they're going to be skiing on bumpy ice. And that requires a different skill set, a blending of, you know, carving turns versus non-carving turns. And, you know, are we giving them that skill set that their skiing is adaptable? And are they taking the ownership to go out and free ski and play and increase their cone of balance? And does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think we got a little technical there on you,
well,
Nicole,
okay.
But I think we did that adaptability and versatility is something that I think is really important for a Colorado kid. You know, one of the things, I mean, you were a Midwestern UP Michigan guy. It's cloudy every day, flat light every day. Yeah, you've got some good snow in the UP, but when you go down south and raise lower in the Midwest, it's icy, it's miserable. Colorado's got it perfect. And so you've got to create that adaptability in your environments and be really thoughtful with how you mix it up so the kids can handle the diverse environments that they'll ultimately ski in.
Yeah. Okay. So my brain kind of went into, like, what are they even talking about, you know, mode for a second. And then a couple words came to mind. One of them was luck and one of them was momentum. And, you know, I wondered, like, coaches hate the word luck because it's not about luck. It's about training your body and your mind to do all the right things, but you can create your own luck by having a coach like you who ingrains these technical aspects of your sport so well that by the time you go out there, when you have a great race, it just feels like nothing. It feels like you didn't even try. I mean, do you remember experiencing that? How does it feel watching your kids experience that?
Yeah, it's usually not a surprise when they do well in a race. They're usually skiing well in training, and then they get the confidence from the training, and then, you know, the race is just like another day of training, hopefully. But if you're not really, you know, training in the tough conditions, if you're not really training when it's ruddy, you know, you're not going to necessarily have the skills to perform at the race or the mindset because you haven't done it before. So you have to train when it's nasty. I think John, you're kind of famous in the administrative team for kind of pushing the coaches to train when it's uglier, because that's something we don't see in Colorado. So when we go out to the East Coast and we do a trip out there, it's really eye-opening for these athletes.
Oh, for sure. And I think too, this idea of training their minds that they can be great in every condition. You know, we've all known athletes who are like, oh, I'm not good when it's sunny, or I'm not good when it's raining, or whatever. But if you have them train their brains so that they feel like they could be great on any given day of conditions, which they do not control, by the way, then I think you win, right?
Yeah. I mean, I personally love storms. Like I love like snowy and rain, and I love the change of seasons. And I truly believe coaches make the weather, you know, with the team. And you can be out skiing in the rain, and if you're, you know, having fun and making jokes, you can kind of take your mind off of the fact that your butt is wet on the chairlift, and you can kind of just be a kid again.
You know, you nailed it right there. I mean, I feel like there's something about you and your coaching that just does have this underlying level of joy. It's like when you said you started out as a kid in Michigan, just like skiing powder till the sun went down. Is that still what drives you?
I wish I had as much time to ski powder as I used to, but yes, I got out last year and I had some amazing powder days. I'm excited for Mahogany Ridge to open. They did some nice work over there.
Well, and I didn't mean literally the feeling of skiing powder. So. No, I love it. You know, I was also thinking about the fact that there are probably some 10-year-old kids in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan who have discovered this great sport of gliding on snow on sticks, basically. And they have these dreams of one day being a skier, maybe a pro skier, competitive skier. What do you want to say to them?
Yeah, just keep dreaming. I think if you have that passion, everything else follows from there. You know, it has to come from within you. It can't come from your parents. It can't come from your coaches. It's got to come from within you. And if you have that passion, everything else will fall into place.
You're a parent now. And I'm curious, as you're thinking about parents and understanding that, like, how can a parent tell if their kid truly has that inner passion? Because that's something I think as a parent, we really want to know.
Yeah, we did an exercise with the team a couple weeks ago at a party, and I had the athletes first off thank their parents, and then I had them tell their parents that they were going to get themselves up for training. Their parents weren't going to get themselves up. And then I had them tell their parents that they were going to take care of their gear, take care of their stuff. And, you know, I think that should be inherent. They should be the ones, you know, waking their parents up to go to the ski hill. And I think if they're doing that and they're fired up to go ski when we don't have training, and they want to go ski after training, because that's when they're really going to learn, you know, the skills that are going to maybe help them get to that next level. You know, we're going to give them a really good base of foundational skills, but they're going to have to go out and do some experimentation and some playing on their own. And I will say that was something that was exceptional about that group that I had last year. They loved to free ski. You know, they wanted to train gates, but they enjoyed going out and skiing the trees and everything just as much.
And that's, you know, potentially one of the higher performing groups you've ever had, and they are skiing because they love it. That is amazing, because a lot of kids at this age are starting to feel the pressure and they're not loving it as much anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's why I coach in Steamboat, because kids love to ski here.
I want you to have that conversation with my daughter. Granted, she's only 11, but can you please have her thank me and then tell us that she's going to take care of all her gear and never forget anything anywhere ever again. Okay. This is awesome. That is so cool, because I think you're teaching them accountability. You know, they like to blame other people when something goes wrong, and usually it's parent that's first, right? So you're kind of telling them as a non-parent in their lives that that time is over.
Yeah. And these are U16s, not U12. So, you know, I'm sure Wilder will get there, but... yes, I think U16s is where you really start to take ownership over your athletic career and experience and the communication, the equipment, and the parents still need to help with that. I think it's okay to help, you know, wax your kids' skis because, you know, occasionally if they need that help because they're so busy. It's school, it's skiing, it's, you know, social life. It's a lot of work, but it's also really rewarding.
So John mentioned you are a parent now. How, tell us about that journey. Did you always know you were going to be a parent?
No, I didn't, but I love it. Absolutely love it. And I'm so happy that I did it. Yeah. He's very fired up for the snow.
How old is he?
He's 2.5.
Oh yeah. Great. So you've got him on skis already?
Yeah, we took him out a few times last year. He kind of mistaked ski jumping for skiing. He would, you know, get in the ski jumping position and go straight down the hill, and I had to catch him. So hopefully we'll get that worked out this year.
Oh, I love it so much. So becoming a father, did that evolve any of your own competitive drive or the way you look at sport or just balance in your life?
I've gotten about a half an hour slower in Steamboat Gravel, the black course, every year. Since I've had a kid. So I'm still competitive, but I'm slower.
Well, and you just mentioned, for those people who don't know, the bike race is what you're talking about, Steamboat Gravel. So at some point, what, in college, you were mountain biking with all your buddies, maybe not doing so much of that in Michigan, were you?
Yeah. I always grew up mountain biking.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So that's been a part of your life and you never let it go.
Yeah, I thought about, you know, moving into competitive bike racing after ski racing, but I just didn't, you know, I didn't have what it takes and or the coaching. But I, you know, just do the town challenges here in town, and anything that comes up, I try to sign up for.
Well, I would say you probably have the engine from all those years of building your own base. And it's really fun to do a sport that wasn't your traditional sport because the pressure to go out and win every bike race is not on your shoulders.
Yeah. I've never thought of it that way, but I love that. Yeah. It's you still have that competitive drive, but there's not this expectation on you, which is hard.
Can I chase a small rabbit hole? I know we're kind of winding down here towards the end, but we've talked a lot with other experts about the idea of diversification. And at a certain age, maybe letting go finally, you know, in college or whatever, of the other sports that you were doing to really focus, but not too soon. But it sounds like you never really let it go. And yet you've been successful. You were able to be successful. So can you talk a little bit about that and like how you promote that concept with your kids too?
Yeah, I think it's something I'm trying to promote more is that free play. You know, I think that's something that our generation had more of, was that free play. We played, you know, touch football, we played pickup baseball. And I think there are a lot of great sports that cross over well with ski racing in particular. I think what our program does with Nordic skiing is great. It's that same glide, that same balance, that ankle flexion. And then I think ice skating has a lot of great crossover with skiing as well.
That is very cool because I didn't think about that either, but you're right. In fact, they all do. So, okay, there's the U14 kids, right? And they're watching your group. What advice do you have for them to best prepare them to join your group next year?
Okay, I could get technical here. I mean, just have a good pole plant. Be on your outside ski and be balanced. But no, I think it's fun. Like U16 years are fun. It's team travel. You get to go and see all these new places, and you know, you get to train during the afternoon. I'd say U14s is, it's hard. You're training at night. You know, you eat dinner, you go train, or you train and then you eat dinner, and then you get to U16 and you just get so much more freedom. And so just keep working hard because it really is rewarding.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. The those Those U14s are definitely looking up to the athletes that have been in your group, which is one of the things that probably gets them excited. And it is they doing that team travel and the camaraderie, going back to the social aspect of the sport, which we talked early on with the chairlift rides and things, is something they definitely have to look forward to. It's really cool hearing about kind of your thought process and everything. And I'm just so happy to have you as part of our staff, Ben. You've been an amazing mentor and coach to both of my kids. So it was a real privilege to talk to you today.
Ben, you accomplished so much as an athlete, but I'm going to say that you are accomplishing even more as a coach. And I think you have really, truly found your calling in life. And I'm so excited to have you as part of the program. It's so cool.
Thanks so much, Nicole and John, for having me. It's a little bit crazy because you have like a little bit of a imposter, you know, feeling that there's so many great coaches out there that you look up to, and to be recognized as one of the best. And I still don't think I stand in their shoes. So I'm working on getting better. Thanks.
Well, you do stand in all of their shoes. You guys work together as a team, and that's what makes this club great. And you're not going to get off without our final question that we ask every guest that comes on the show. I don't think I gave it to you ahead of time.
Well, I listen to the podcast.
So you know it. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah, I think I've already kind of answered it, but I'll go deeper.
You're going to have to go deeper. So what is the greatest lesson you've learned through sport?
Ownership. I've learned a lot of lessons, but ownership. I'll tell one quick story about when I went to Europe for my first time. I rented my own car. The airlines lost my baggage. There's no cell phones. You know, you're trying to get Wi-Fi at these little coffee shops. I have one of those paper maps, and I'm driving around the Dolomites of Italy, and hooking up with the U.S. ski team to do the Europa Cup races. And I think I learned so much in those years about taking ownership of, you know, managing your travel, your time, your equipment, your fitness, your skiing. There's so much that goes into these sports that you'll be prepared for anything else in life. If you can really take this and have it become your own, that's, I think, the greatest lesson I've learned. And there's some failure along the way. I learned from that failure, and I think that's ownership as well.
How'd you perform there?
My first Europa Cup race, Marcel Hirscher won it, and I was 59th, and they only take 60 in the second run, but I made the second runner of Europa Cup.
Amazing.
And I did podium on my last race in Europe. So,
well, it's been a blast having you. We're not going to keep you any longer because you got a training plan to put together for today.
Yeah, we're on snow at Loveland this weekend.
All right, everybody, over and out. Thanks again, Ben.
Thanks, Nicole. Thanks, John.
Thank you for listening to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. Check out the club's winter and summer programs at sswsc.org. If you have a special topic or guest you want featured, we'd love to hear from you. Now get out there and support, lead, or be a champion on or off the mountain.